This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Are you ready? Week 4 kicks off tonight, Thursday Night Football in Cincinnati. The weather's going to be fine, although many across, of course, the Atlantic and Florida in particular, dealing with Hurricane Ian, we sent our best. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. So Stephen and I were having a conversation about just an impossible spot, right? Like, how much innately does home field advantage matter on Thursday nights? Now, I remember it was either a year or two ago, our numbers expert, Steve Mackinnon, did a deep dive. And what he talked about is the home field advantage really picks up in the second half of the season on Thursday Night Football. As it makes sense, the teams start to wear down, that short rest, that short travel starts to add up. But Miami's in a tough spot tonight. And you saw Will's laying the 3.5, that key number of 3. He's going to lay it with Cincinnati. It's just situationally. I mean, think about this defense, which is depleted. They ran up, 90 plays? They were on the field for 90 plays in 100-degree weather on Miami just, 4 days ago? Miami, this is a tough spot for them tonight.
And go into the game with a lot of bumps and bruises. You know, here's what I think sometimes we get lose sight of. Just because you're healthy or just because you play doesn't mean you're playing well. Like, take the other night, Monday night. Mekhi Parsons had the flu where he was sick. I didn't think Mekhi Parsons was the real Mekhi Parsons. I thought he was less than 100%. I didn't think he had the same juice and the same explosiveness that we're used to seeing. He tried to play. I don't think he played to the level we're used to. And I think that's something that's really important to understand, that when guys are hurt and they're beat up and they have less time to get ready on a Thursday night, they're going to play, but they're not going to play as well. Armstead, for example, you think he's going to play as good Thursday night as he would have if he had 2 more days rest? I doubt it.
No.
Right? Same thing with Holland. He's going to play, but is he going to play? What happens when he gets hit? You know, all those things start to matter, and it becomes a problem. And so, look, you know, but the one thing that worries me is that, I mean, they're a serendipitous. There's something about Miami. They found a way to win, you know, and they seem – and anytime you can hit 3-run homers like they can, you're going to be in a game. And they can hit 3-run homers because of stupidity on the deep. I mean, don't cover the guy. Third and 22, they convert throwing a middle read that hung in the air for a half hour, and neither safety made a play on the ball. Had Poyer or Hyde been back there, they would have picked that thing off like
That's
nothing.
Correct. That's correct. That is correct. That back end is absolutely beaten down. Okay, we'll get Michael's official play on Thursday Night Football. We've got professional capper Mike Somich, Bon Vivant, Mike Palm, Palm's pressing 3, so a busy hour here. Let me just get a quick reaction from Monday night. We missed you on Monday's show. Cowboys 23-16 winner, both the Giants and Cowboys sitting 2-1. What was your big takeaway from both sides?
Well, my takeaway for the Cowboys was, look, I think Cooper Rush is better than I thought he was. And I think Cowboys have done a wonderful job, underscore wonderful, credit Mike McCarthy, of managing the game with Cooper Rush in it. And they should take the same approach when Dak comes back. Like, they've managed the game. They're two best players, Pollard and Zeke. They're getting them the ball. They're doing different things. They're in a bunch of different formations, tight ends. They didn't even have Schultz on the field. Like, you don't have to lead the league in yards. You don't have to become a head coach. You have to win the game, right? And I think they've done a great job of managing it. Look, I thought their defense would dominate against the Giants because the Giants can't protect. I mean, Daboll has done a good job. To me, it was a game featuring two backup quarterbacks. And I ask you, Patrick, which backup would you rather have, Daniel Jones or would you rather have Cooper Rush?
I think Rush. I will say this about Jones. I don't know if you completely throw it out, but he was pressured interminably. I mean, just nonstop pressure. No. That offensive line couldn't have played worse.
I mean, look, they draft Evan Neal in the first round. The guy's supposed to be a good player, and he played like
disaster.
He was not very good. He was horrible. I mean, you got to be worried about that. I know we're supposed to give superlatives to the giant new front office, but if that was one of my picks, I would be scared to death. And Thibodeau didn't do anything on the other side as a first rounder. That was his first game, really. I mean, there was no juice out of either first round pick. That's got to worry you a little bit there. But more than anything, I think when you watch New York, I think Daboll's done a good job of just trying to keep the game close, get it into the fourth quarter, and see what happens. And they can't overcome negativity. They can't overcome penalty yards. They can't overcome. Here's what I think we lose sight of a little bit. When a quarterback can run, when a quarterback runs, it takes a bad quarterback and makes him look better. And that's where they're trying to get Daniel Jones going running. Like, for me, Justin Fields is a running back who throws the ball. He's not a quarterback who runs. He's a running back. Because you want him to throw it as many times as you can. If you take away the run from Justin Fields, he cannot play. He's not playing quarterback. So, to me, Daniel Jones can function, but the only way it's going to work is if he runs the ball. But can he stay healthy running? I don't know about that.
Yeah, Jones, let's just be very clear. He doesn't have the anticipation. You've been talking about it for years. He was completely overdrafted. He's in New York. It's a ridiculously weird spot for a guy that just isn't good enough to play the position. He's following Eli Manning. Like, he was scrambling for his life, and he's got some mobility. He's got some athleticism, but he's not a starter. He's not going to be your long-term answer, and they're going to move on.
They know that. But here's the thing that I want Giant fans to understand. Don't believe me what I've been saying for 3 years. Don't believe me, okay? But why don't you just look at how Brian Daboll managed the end of the first half? And that tells you all you need to know about what he thinks of Daniel Jones. He's scared to death of him. He don't want to lose the game with him.
That's exactly right. He was completely afraid of his quarterback. Just news here coming in. Ian Rappaport reporting the Bucs and Chiefs game will be played as scheduled on Sunday night in Tampa Bay. So again, there was some concern about that game being moved, but it is clear now the Bucs and Chiefs will play in Tampa on Sunday night. One more thing about the Cowboys. You know how the Cowboys are called America's team? Well, we call them VEASAN's team, whether it's Dave Ross, Femi, John Goulet, they're all
Bill
deriding. My man, Bill Berman. Yeah, that's look at Billy B. One thing we can say is it's all, you use the word serendipitous. This season's kind of setting up perfectly because that defense isn't good. They have a potential to be very, very good. And all of a sudden you're going to get Dak back. CD broke out a little bit. Like, Pollard is electric. This is a pretty
Gallup
interesting season.
Gallup is going to come back. Look, but I say this. It's going to be. But I think what they should have learned is they need to play the same way when Dak comes back. And that's not a knock on Dak. That's just how you win football games. Three dimensions. Offense, defense, kicking game. That returner that they've got is sensational. The kid they got from North Texas State, he's from TCU. He's unbelievable. He averages 18 yards a punt return.
That's great. He's great.
He's unbelievable. He got him as a college free agent. One thing I've always said about the Cowboys, Will McClay, their general manager of personnel, they do a good job in personnel. But the other point I want to make about Dallas is when you watch them, I mean, when you watch what they're trying to do, Tyler Smith, I think, is a really good player. I think he's done that. They have the kind of defense that can give Philadelphia some trouble because they're athletic with ends that can run. You can't have guys that can't run on the edges against the Eagles' run game. The other thing I wanted to bring up, since we're on Dallas, this line has me completely befuddled. Like, I power rank the teams. I have Dallas should be a 6.3 favorite against the Washington football team, who I thought were a disaster last week, a unmitigated complete disaster.
So bad.
They didn't even look like they got coached at all. Thank God Daniel Snyder's an Elba. But the point here is this. How are they only a 3-point favorite against Washington?
If Philly played Washington, you watched that game and I did. If Philly played Washington 10 times, they're winning 10 times. They're so much better than the Commanders. I don't know what Rivera's doing and I don't know what Del Rio's doing on defense, but they got so outcoached in that game. They weren't prepared. I mean, Wentz doesn't have the mobility anymore, and you're 100% right. I'm shocked it's as short as 3. This number, and it's fishy.
It doesn't make any sense at all. Like, who's betting Washington? Why would you bet? To me, it's one of those, don't touch it. It's like, it's a trap. It's like, you know, Batman walks into a trap, then the next thing you know, he's over a bunch of hot coals. I mean, the Penguins, they're lifting on him. It feels like a trap.
You're going to get Gallup back. You could get Schultz back. And all of a sudden, a Washington team that luck boxed their way into a win week one against Jacksonville have looked terrible since. Remember that first half against the Lions is about as bad as a team can play. And then they were desperate and the Lions got soft on defense in the second half. But the Commanders against Philly, I'm so glad you brought it up. It's under discussed. They were disgusting in that game. I don't know what they're coaching there. It was gross.
I don't know what they're doing. Wentz got hit on almost every single play. Like, okay, so you say, well, maybe it's a good matchup for Washington against Dallas. No, it's not. Washington's front, they couldn't block. They couldn't block Philly. They're not going to be able to block Dallas. Parsons is going to be healthy. He'll come after them.
Scott Turner, who runs the offense there, like, he doesn't have – there's no outs.
They can't protect.
Wentz.
Burrow's 10-7 on passing attempt sack. Wentz is 10-3.
And there's just no safety. I'm like, do you have a dump off for the guy? He's a statue now. The injuries have added up for Wentz. He still has a tremendous arm. But anyway, the offense is disjointed. They do have talent offensively. Here's the point, and it's a great point by Michael. That's three right now. I do see juice on the three at most shops, so it could be headed to Dallas laying 3.5. We always talk about timing. If you want to bet Dallas, lay the three right now.
I don't understand it. Patrick, it's the most confusing line
to me.
It really
is.
Like last week, I was really confused by the Jacksonville line with the Chargers, you know, because of the uncertainty, because I think people didn't power rank Jacksonville good enough. Now, you could say, well, Herbert was hurt in the game. No, I think Jacksonville's going to win the game anyway, and they beat him up. But this line, to me, is another one of those spooky, crazy lines.
Yeah, the number dropping on the Herbert news almost worked against what Michael was trying to say. Michael had Jacksonville close to a pick 'em with Herbert in. That was the point. Our buddy Mike Somich next.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, it's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app. That's BetMGM Sports. Has all your favorite wagering options, in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. It's a great interface. Make sure you check it out. And also, if you're in Nevada, you stop by any MGM property on the strip, bring your state-issued ID, you're ready to bet within minutes. You got to be 21 years or older. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. If you have a gambling problem, it's 1-800-522-4700. Okay, Michael Lombardi there as we kick off week four. I'm Patrick Maher here, and there you are. Hope you're having a good Thursday as we welcome you back here on the Lombardi Line. Hope you all down in Florida are staying safe. We send our best with Hurricane Ian, of course. Now, we welcome in our buddy, professional handicapper Mike Somich, who always digs up stuff out of the ordinary. As we start, first off, hi Mike, thank you for joining us. You become kind of internationally known because of your horse racing handicapping, and you bet on every sport. For my friends and colleagues, I would say you have a very specific and detailed approach to handicapping. Do you think your horse racing handicapping helps you specifically to cap other sports?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, to be profitable in horse racing, you have to be really selective. And I think one thing gamblers really struggle with is bankroll management and understanding you don't have to bet every game on the board. There's another football game tomorrow night. We've got a football game every night from Thursday through Monday. It's important to selectively pick your spots. And horse racing really teaches you bankroll management because you could bet a race every 2 minutes in the U.S. for basically 8 hours a day. That forces you to really be selective in where you're putting your money and where you're investing your money. And you have to look at this as an investment when you're trying to do it professionally.
Great point. You know, Mike, I think it's a great point. I think the college football slate, that's why I think you should just dedicate yourself to two conferences. And I think the number one thing, this is what, when you walk into a draft room and you're trying to build a draft board, people think you're trying to find players. You're not. You're trying to eliminate players. That's the number one criteria having a good draft is elimination. And so if you're going to be good at sports betting, you got to eliminate games. Like, I'll give you a perfect example, the Dallas-Washington game. I don't understand how the line's three. You know, I have it as a six-point game. It's three. The Cowboys are home. It's not even on the road for them. I'm not going to touch it because it seems fishy.
That's one of those, it's a trap games. I heard you before the segment. I was thinking of the Star Wars, it's a trap, right? But you hit the nail on the head with the Batman reference as well. I love that. That's a tough game to handicap. I mean, you got Dallas coming off the short week on a Monday night game, but man, they are going to wreak havoc on that Washington offensive line. And offensive lines in general are just, they've gotten injured a lot this year, and you've seen just struggles protecting the quarterback. That game in general, I think you're going to see Wentz get hit quite a bit.
So two things for our pro tips. One, what Michael mentioned, grab a conference or two and focus, specialization. And then also, I guess, selectivity. remember, as Mike just said, bankroll management, it's not just because a game's on primetime, you're betting. You have to be selective, and that's how you profit over a long season. Okay, tremendous start. Let's get going. What do you got tonight? Cincinnati's laying 3.5, so through that key number, you got a total of 48.5. Everybody's still on the over, although we're hitting at a 67% clip on the unders here, Samich.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch this total. I'm really not sure what you're going to get from Miami on the offensive side of the ball. This is a short week for them. The first time Mike McDaniel's going to coach on a Thursday night in general, that's been very difficult for rookie head coaches. On top of that, you got back-to-back emotional victories in the Miami Heat. The defense was on the field for 93 snaps. This is just a really tough spot for Miami. After we saw Cincinnati kind of get a get-right game up there playing the New York Jets, I think that that line looks significantly better for Cincinnati. And when you're not facing J.J. Watt or Micah Parsons, that's going to happen. So I like Cincinnati in this spot. I laid the 2 earlier this week. I would still lay the 3.5 in this game. I think Cincinnati has a huge situational edge here. I think they're slightly better on a neutral field. So I think 3.5 is a pretty fair number to be laying.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the unpredictability. I'm with you, Mike. To me, Miami should be the better team. But I watched Parsons the other night, and I didn't think he was 100%, and I don't think he played to his level. And I think we often, even though guys play, Tua's going to play. Is he going to be as effective? Can he move around? He's got the ankle. He's got the back. What happens if he gets hit? There's a lot of uncertainty here.
Yep. Yeah, we saw 100%. Teddy Bridgewater face Cincinnati last year, and he really struggled in that spot. Miami ended up losing that game 15-10. I don't want any part of Teddy Bridgewater if he does end up coming in here, even with the weapons. So I'm unsure of what you're going to get from Tua tonight. I think they're going to protect Tua tonight, short, quick passes, try and get the ball out fast. You're not going to see the whole playbook because it's a Thursday night. You've got everything going on in Miami right now with the hurricane. It's a really rough spot for the Dolphins.
Michael and I love the London games. Teams, players, they hate them, but we love them because we're in-game betting live coming up this Sunday with Minnesota, New Orleans at Tottenham Stadium there in London. Maybe Minnesota buoyed by the late win over Detroit, and New Orleans, it's going bad. TBD on the quarterback. You've got Minnesota laying 2.5, and you like the Vikings here, Samich.
Yeah, I like him quite a bit. We've seen that Jameis Winston and Michael Thomas both out of practice the last 2 days. That's a significant downgrade if you end up with Andy Dalton throwing to Chris Olave. That's a tough break there for the New Orleans Saints. I also don't love the fact that you got this plane ride coming up for Jameis Winston, who has a legitimately broken back right now. So I'm not sure that you want your quarterback sitting there on this long flight, heading over to London and then playing in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing Andy Dalton here for the Saints. And the Vikings got right against, their offense did at least, got right against Detroit, who has been able to put up points on a lot of different defenses. I really think that Minnesota's going to end up laying 3.5 by the time this thing kicks off, maybe more if the injuries adjustment happens. So I think getting in now with a 2.5 number is key, and I like them laying 2.5.
Yeah, I mean, look, Minnesota, if they got to protect Cousins, because the one thing I thought New Orleans can do is they create some problems with their front. That's the thing that worries me. Cousins, on whether it's the road or home, he gets hit early and all of a sudden it starts to fall apart. But look, New Orleans, you guys think I'm crazy, but without Taysom Hill, they really don't have that. You know, he makes plays for them. And the game they won opening day, he broke the game open with their plays, and he's hurt too.
Yeah, they rely on him for big plays and be able to have positive matchup. And without Taysom Hill in there, it's harder for them to get those. And if Michael Thomas ends up out as well, it's going to be tough for them to put points on the board.
Okay, last one. Mike Samich joining us here. Of course, professional handicapper, racingdudes.com. Jacksonville, Philly. So what's fascinating here is you're on the other side of Michael. Michael's been on Jacksonville. He's talked about the improvement specifically on defense. We've seen Lawrence take the step up. You do think that Jacksonville's a little overvalued in the market right now. My assumption is you're going to lay the 6.5 with Philly.
I am, and this to me is really a market play as much as anything else. I actually bet Jacksonville week 1 through 3. They were a team I was pretty high on coming into the preseason, and I didn't think that much of Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia's play is exceptionally well. This game was Philadelphia laying 9 preseason, so you would have to adjust up Jacksonville 7 or 8 points in the power ranking if you move Philly up 4 or 5 to get to this 6.5 number. I just don't see how you can make that drastic of an adjustment. So either that -9 number was just way off over the summer, or the 6.5 is a little bit short. I was really impressed with how Philadelphia is able to handle the lead the last 2 games as well after falling apart against Detroit. They clearly learned something in that Detroit game. They've jumped all over teams early. Hurts has been running and is healthy right now. I think they put up points early here against Jacksonville, and once they do, they can pin their ears back and rush Trevor Lawrence very well. I don't love Jacksonville's line. They struggled in their first game against the Commanders. I think they struggle again here, especially if Philadelphia is able to get a lead. So I'm going to take Philadelphia here. I also think situationally, it's not the best spot for Jacksonville. They just traveled across the country and faced a Chargers team that was absolutely devastated by injury, traveling all the way back and then going up to Philadelphia for this game. Again, they're affected by the hurricane going through there, so a little bit of distraction as well. I just feel like this number should be on the other side of 7. So I'll lay the 6.5 with Philly.
You know, I think this is, you know, there's always a game, Patrick, Mike, that the team either rises to the level or they kind of teeter off. And last week they did against the Chargers. This would worry me. I mean, this would worry me because they're really going to take a step up. And Peterson has got to be able to manage the game correctly. And I know I just said that, but sometimes I worry about that. He gets a little bit too crazy with his decision-making in-game. And against Philadelphia, if you get behind, I mean, they've outscored everybody. They've scored 45 points in the second quarter alone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a problem.
Peterson, some emotion going back to Philly as well. Okay, before we say goodbye, this is going to be our pro tip for the hour. This is incredible. You have a crazy, and we just dropped our NHL betting guide. You have a crazy preseason hockey trend as far as the totals here on the way out, Samich. What do you got?
Yeah, this one's a little bit nutty. I mean, I love the idea of, you know, picking a couple conferences like Michael mentioned earlier. Sometimes you look for markets that are just not as saturated or as mature as the NFL market to try and make money because Vegas adjusts slower. They don't, you know, the preseason hockey totals is not where you're getting a ton of money right now. And because of that, even though the under has had in the preseason, you haven't seen the totals be adjusted at all. Right now, the under and 40 games into the NHL preseason is 27-9-4, clicking off at a 75% hit rate. And no one cares because no one's really betting it. But right now I'm playing every single under in the NHL until this trend kind of flips over because 75% is wild in this game.
Holy, let me repeat. 27-9-4 over 40 games in the preseason to the under. That's 75%, yep. Mike. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
How you make some money.
That's how you make money. So there's a pro tip as well coupled with that. Pay attention to the markets being avoided. And that is important. Mm-hmm. And NHL preseason market right now very much being avoided. RacingDudes.com for the information. Mike Samich, professional handicapper. Thank you, Mike. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Awesome. Thanks, job. Guys. Thank you, Mike.
That is a crazy 27-9-4 to the under. That's almost literally unbelievable.
Mike Palm's an under player in hockey, too. He's a big-time under player.
He's soccer, any sport, Mike's going to go under. And we've got Palm's Pressing 3 coming up next as well. Mike Palm joins us here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, Mike Palm was just reading Annie McNeil's NHL betting guide, which is dropping. So make sure you check it out. All 32 teams previewed. VSiN.com/subscribe. Again, if you're new to hockey betting, bet the unders, as we just heard in the preseason as far as the totals. But we can teach you. Annie McNeil's going to help you understand handicapping the NFL. VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we're back. He is Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. Bon Vivant, of course, Circa Sports, VSiN host. Mike Palm joins us. I noticed one of our three new podcasts, and remember, GM Shuffle drops today. Go to VSiN.com, but also the NFL betting podcast. I noticed that Mike Palm has ripped that away from anybody. You are now the guy on the NFL podcast. Congratulations, my friend.
Well, it's incredible. Enjoying doing it with Danny Burke. We tape right after we get done with this show on Thursdays, and we go through each game on the Sunday slate. It's a lot of fun, and it drops on Friday mornings for those of you interested.
That's awesome.
How are we feeling today?
Oh, we're feeling wonderful. It's always exciting, the highlight of my week, to be able to join you and Michael for this short time.
Palm's Pressing 3 is coming up, which is what we wait for with bated breath. Mike Palm, of course, Bon Vivant joining us. What's the overlook on the weather situation? I noticed a lot of those college games along the Atlantic coast, I'm sure at Circa as well, big time drops in the totals.
Ludicrous. Some of them 10, 12 points. But if it's that bad, are they going to play the game? I don't know. You know, we talk about the pro tip of the hour. This weekend, it's especially important to know the house rules. And I know we've talked about that before, but knowing in terms of games are postponed or if sites change, like at Circa, the game has to be played within 24 hours of when it's scheduled and within 100-mile radius of the stadium it was originally scheduled to be played at. So, for instance, if they move the Sunday night game to Minneapolis, if you've already bet on it, it's out. Now, when they announce that, obviously we'll take it down for a few minutes and put it back up. But bets on that game to be played at Raymond James are off because it's not going to be within a 100-mile radius.
So what happens, Mike? Then you refund your ticket and then you make the new bet? Is that how it works?
That's right. If you bet on the app, you're going to get an immediate refund. If you have a hard ticket, you bet over the counter, it's a refund. You'd have to come in to get your money. Then you bet the, you know, I don't know if the line's going to change much, but you bet into the new game posted in Minneapolis.
No doubt. Well, the line would change if it's up in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that.
It's moved from Chiefs 2 to a pick'em right now, Michael. That's been
I know.
The movement.
I saw that in the contest. I just saw the contest lines come out, Mike, and so that's what I wanted to ask you. So when you guys shape these contest lines, and I post them all, I put them on my worksheet every week because it's the only static lines that you can have. Are these lines what you anticipate the closing number to be on Sunday?
It's not really. It's shaded a little bit if we think there's a chance somebody's going to be out and it hasn't been announced yet. But look, last week we had it at 7 with the Chargers, thinking maybe Herbert would still play. We didn't shade the number. Now, there's a big difference, right? It went 7-3, just like we talked about last Thursday. 1,800 right. people, and you had to get your picks in by 4 o'clock Pacific on Saturday when it was thought Herbert wasn't going to play, and the line was 7. 1,800 people out of a little over 4,000 used him. I'm surprised it was that low. With a four-point stale line at that point, it's surprising almost not everybody. This early in the season, where you don't have to be a contrarian because you have game theory at the end of the year. Meanwhile, amazingly, two entries have gone 15-0 through the first 2 weeks, first 3 weeks of the contest, and 12 entries at 14-1. We know who one of those entries is. I mean, you may not know, but we know the person. I'll tell you off air. He's certainly in line to get a piece of the money. Remember, the first quarter is 4 weeks, so this is it. We're done here this Sunday. We're handing out $300,000 in prizes on the first quarter, so should be an interesting close here.
Yeah, I mean, that's 15-0 is remarkable. I mean, to be able to have that and do that consistently is just fascinating, and it's a tribute to their ability to take emotion out of their picks, right? I think that's to go 15-0. You have to almost be stoic and not go with gut instincts or feel. You just got to go with your numbers, and your numbers got to be perfect.
You know, Matt Eumanns is doing his Friday night show, the Saturday bet preview, and he's doing the Circa Invitational Contest with 16 top handicappers, $25,000 for first place. Derek's putting up the money. And Matt and I are not in the contest, but we're playing along every Friday night. I'm 11-4 through 3 weeks. I'm on top of the world. I'd be 4 games behind in our contest. Think
it's
about
incredible.
That.
That's right.
It's to go 15-0 or 14-1. It's insane.
And nobody in that contest, Patrick. Nobody in the contest that Maddie's doing, because they're doing overs, unders. They're doing everything, and nobody's undefeated in that contest.
Yeah, I think Chuck Edel is either 13-2 or 12-3, and then a couple of us at 11-4. And we also can use college to throw that in.
Right.
We can use college sides and totals. Obviously, this is an NFL contest. But the law of numbers, 4,000 against 18. But it's certainly interesting. And then on the flip side, in Survivor, 75% of the entries are out. Again, another 500 eliminated last week with Chiefs, Chargers and Raiders being and Bills being the ones with double digits. Chiefs, obviously, 260 went down. There was a lot of money line plays last week here at the book, too, on the Chiefs that fell short there with that crazy penalty by Jones that let the Colts back in the game.
Unbelievable.
A couple of appreciations quickly. One, remember, what separates Circa Millions is quarterly payouts, which is awesome. And two, kind of a stroke of genius. I think you both would agree. The Human Show bet prep on Saturday night coinciding with the professional handicapping tournament. It's like Circa Invitational. Like, Palm, that's just cool. That's old school Vegas.
Well, give Derek credit for putting up the money, but Matt put a lot of thought into this show, and you know he's done many variations of the Eds with Jonathan, and they're terrific together, but now sort of different roles in this new lineup. And I mean, Matt put a lot of time and effort putting this crew of 16 together. Handicappers, and then this whole concept starting in week 9, the person with the worst record starts getting eliminated, as you go down towards the end. So, I mean, nobody wants to be the first one out. Everybody's having a lot of fun with it. We put it on in the book starting at 10:30 Pacific. You know, the games are all done, so we put it on with full volume. People come here just like they used to at the Stardust, come here to watch. And he's got, of these 16 guys, he's rotating four or five through every weekend that are coming to Vegas and going on air with him and giving their picks and explanations.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. And that show is replayed before the Lombardi Line on Saturdays and Sundays, too. So we're thrilled about that.
And it's on, and you could get it download. I mean, I think it's must listen to. You have to listen to it. You got 16 people that have spent all week studying. They're going to do a lot of homework for you. You don't have to take their picks, but I think it's an outstanding show. I really do.
Correct. Can you comment on Washington and Dallas, and then we'll get to Palm's Pressing 3 coming back here. Mike Palm joining us. Does it feel trappy? I mean, Dallas is laying 3 with Washington coming to town. Where do you sit on this one, Mike?
We're at 3 with 15. I got to believe it goes up. I can't believe the number. I saw 2.5 earlier this week. What are people watching? You gave your four worst teams. Well, what about the Commodores? I think they throw their hat in the ring for a worst team. No, but nobody... Patrick,
one of my worst teams.
The worst half of football this year was week 2 in Detroit.
First half against Detroit.
In the last...
It was topped by last week. It got topped last week.
In the last...
There was worse than last week.
In the last two first halves, they have 5 first downs. 2 against the Lions and 3 against the Eagles. Think about that.
The punter's exhausted from the last two first halves. I mean, their punter's exhausted. They go punt, 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 punt. Safety, punt, 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 punt. I mean, it's like unbelievable. And yet they're... I don't get it. Like, I'm going to stay away. I think it's a trap. I think the Riddler's behind the glass. I think it's Batman's going to walk right into it. Don't do it. It's Sonny Corleone going to the toll plaza. Don't do it. Don't do it. He still goes.
Hey, Michael, speaking of Dallas, does Dan Quinn get enough credit? I mean, he had the run, you know, he was heralded in Seattle, and then he goes and head coach in Atlanta, and the bloom sort of comes off the rose. I think he's done a very good job the last couple of years with this Cowboys defense.
And I think what he's done more than anything is he's diversified his portfolio, right? So he's really done a good job of being able to spread it out and change what he is. He's in an odd front. He's in an over. He's not like the guy, Mr. Clean in New York, who's going to line up in this over front with a safety over here, and we're playing cover 3, cover 1. Like, he's not that. And that's what he used to be. That's what he used to be in Atlanta, and that's why he got run out of Atlanta. And then when he left Atlanta, remember, Raheem Morris takes over, they play better defense. So give him credit. I applaud Dan Quinn tremendously. I was shocked. Hey, I thought he was going to get the Denver job. He thought he was going to get the Denver job. Everybody thought he was going to get the Denver job. But something happened in the interview that Nathaniel Hackett wowed him. Now, I'd like to have recorded video of that interview so I can learn from it, because I don't know how that wow happened. I don't know where it occurred.
Did I just hear you call Robert Saleh Mr. Clean?
Yeah,
that why I hadn't noticed that until now is I'm very happy that I
borrow that
life.
From our good friend. I didn't nickname him that. I borrow that from our good friend Chris Felica. He gave me that. So he didn't want me to say it, but he is Mr. Clean. He'll stamp out all smells. He'll line up in his 8-man front. You can still run the ball on him, you know, because he's got go gap integrity in his 8-man front. You want me to go on? I'll keep going. I mean, like anything you want to do badly, he'll do it.
Palm's Pressing 3 is coming up. Most don't know that Mike Palm is also a budding Ansel Adams. Is that a photographer? That was a beautiful picture you sent us today,
beautiful.
Mike. Thank you for that pick-me-up.
I'm proud of the yellow bells. My garden's beautiful, and it's easier to work out there when it's in the high 90s, not 115.
There you have it. Stop by, take a picture of Mike Palm's garden. Coming up next, Palm's Pressing 3. Can't wait. We continue. Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, it's BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Unleash the spirit of Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. So it's very simple. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM reward points, which you can use for online bonus credits. Also, if you're headed to Vegas, you can use those reward points for dining, shows, hotel rooms, at MGM Resorts. It's a great loyalty program, the best in the business. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You got to be 21 years or older. 1-800-GAMBLER if you do have an issue. We got you back. Michael Lombardi getting fired up for week four starts tonight. Remember, we're here tomorrow. We're here on Saturday for college. We're here live for in-game betting with Minnesota and New Orleans on Sunday, Lombardi Line. And then we cap off the week on Monday. And then Michael turns around 10 minutes and does like 10 podcasts. Anyway, we got you back. Mike Palm joins us, bon vivant of Circa and VSiN. Also, a noted scribe. I didn't realize the journalism degree you got in college has become so important here at VSiN, Mike Palm.
Well, it's history and English, and I, you know, I get a lot of help from Ben Fox, who's really the Mike Wallace of our generation, a great investigative reporter, and he's helping me turn this no hyperbole into a column. So a great thanks to him.
Well,
I love it.
Always important. So this is what I look forward to: alliteration. And Palm's pressing three is very much that. Mike, it's your turn. Kick it to the big guy. We'll start with your first one.
Michael, we learned a lot about the Chargers and Brandon Staley this week. First, they absolutely don't trust Chase Daniels to play a clearly compromised Justin Herbert, their whole franchise, in a week three game. And Staley kept Herbert in the game down four touchdowns late, saying, quote, Justin didn't want to quit on the team. So exactly who is in charge? Did we miss the era where Herbert earned clout and decision-making power with a Super Bowl run or even a playoff victory? He's 16-19 as a starter. And how is everyone in the building viewing Brandon Staley? Did the Chargers once again hire the wrong guy?
Well, I think common sense isn't common, right? I think that clearly that every decision that I've seen Staley make, even though the analytical community loves him, hasn't been very good. And how he manages the game. I mean, look, you can make all the fun everybody wants about Mike McCarthy. Okay, go ahead. Guys won a Super Bowl, won a lot of games in Green Bay. I know he had Aaron Rodgers. Of course, that doesn't affect with Matt LaFleur because he's a great coach, even though he has Aaron Rodgers. But the reality here to me is simply this, that Staley makes bad decisions and he never manages the game. He doesn't do what Dallas has done with Cooper Rush, which is, okay, here's how we're going to play this game. And they throw the ball too much in terms of protecting their quarterback. And he's gotten hurt now. Now he's got three offensive linemen that might not play. And what bothers me the most, and it bothers me about Mr. Clean in New York, is simply this. When you're a specialist in an area, defense or offense, and that side of the ball is really bad, something's wrong. Last year, look at the numbers. Other than the New York Jets, was anybody worse than the Chargers defensively? Now I know, they got Pro Bowlers on every level. I've heard it before. And I'm sure Pro Football Focus has them all graded in the top three, along with Cam Fleming, the right tackle for the Broncos. That being said, at what point does he start producing with good players?
When you get my man going on a tangent like that, that means Palm's pressing three are off to a good start. Number two.
Was everyone dismissing Russell Wilson's film the last 2 years under the assumption he had quit on Seattle? He very much looks like a shot fighter. He is not a threat as a runner and has limited mobility in the pocket. And yet the Broncos should be 3-0. Are the Broncos contenders, Michael, or are they pretenders?
Well, I think that everybody overlooked it. Now, we didn't hear at VSiN because we kept saying, because as a betting network, we always would had a rule to never bet against Russell Wilson in a close game. But that rule slipped away last year when we saw him not be able to lead a comeback. When we saw him not play well in the fourth quarter. He's got a guy wide open in the back of the end zone against Washington and doesn't even throw it to him. I mean, it's like horrible. He don't want to get hit anymore, Mike. I think that's what I see on tape. Quarterbacks go through this. I thought it was with, even though Kurt Warner's in the Hall of Fame, you know, and I get that he got in there. It's great for Kurt. But there was a time where Kurt Warner was at the New York Football Giants. He was not very good. And at the end of his years in St. Louis, he wasn't very good because he didn't want to get hit. He got to the point where he got hit too much, and his eye level came down. And to me, Russell Wilson's eye level's down. Look at his yards per attempt. He doesn't throw the deep ball like he did, not looking for the deep ball. And then the bigger problem. Athleticism on the move. Can he make a play? Can he make somebody miss? I tweeted out this, and I don't tweet very much anymore because I can't stand it, but the reality of it is I tweeted it out. Like, at what point is somebody going to say he's playing bad? Like, as Cosell said, if we see it, we got to say it. Like, at what point was somebody going to say, this Russell Wilson guy, I know he's Russell Wilson, but he ain't playing any good. Like, what's wrong with that? Like, why can't we have that discussion?
It's a great question from Palm. I think he's a bottom third quarterback right now. He looks chubby and slow to me. Palm's pressing three. Number three is
Well, wait a
Mike.
Second. Hold on, Patrick. I grade quarterbacks every week. I go through it. I'm going to give you my – and I put it in the team, my team rankings, because I have to – I rank the teams. So Denver's quarterback rating is 27th.
So bottom third.
There you go.
27. He's been on
godly
bad.
No, I'm probably number three on Pro Football Focus because his numbers are incredible, along with Cam Fleming.
Yeah.
Nick Bosa is the 23rd. Uh-oh. Mike, Nick Bosa is the 23rd best defensive end in the National Football. I'm going to do a survey. I want to go get Indiana Jones, and we're going to go find the other 22.
Number three, Palms pressing three.
Speaking of the bottom third of quarterback play, Michael, what's wrong with the Saints besides the obvious that Jameis Winston isn't playing well? Is it simply that, or are there deeper chemistry and internal issues? The Saints are a team that took a ton of sharp money all summer on over-the-win total and division bets.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is first of all, Kamara doesn't look like the Kamara you and I both know. I think we could agree with that, right? I don't think he's the same player. I don't know if it's because he's hurt and, you know, he missed the first game of the season. I don't know what that is, but he doesn't have the same juice. For example, if you said to me before the season start, who you taking, Cordell Patterson or Kamara? I'm taking Kamara. If you asked me that question today, not even close. I'm taking Cordell Patterson. He's unbelievable. I don't know what's going on with Kamara. That's one. Number two, their left tackle situation is problematic. They're not able to really get control of the line of scrimmage. They can't really run the football. I mean, they can't run it. They're 28th in the league in the most attempts throwing the ball. Now, they got behind against Atlanta. They got behind against Tampa. And they got behind against Carolina. They can't play with fast. So their offense, to me, can't get anything going. And then defensively is where I think they have problems. They're not able to turn the ball over. They haven't been able to create turnovers. And they haven't been able to get off the field. So I think it's a lot of it. They've got nine turnovers. Other than the Patriots, they have the most turnovers in the league, nine. You want to know why they're 1-2? There it is right there.
I think Peter King reset the market on this Saints team. He had them late. He was comparing them to the 85 Bears, Mike Palm. I mean, he could not stop gushing over this team. They're going to make a change at quarterback. Winston's been awful. I understand he's banged up, but he's been terrible, Mike.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the best under bets last weekend was him and Baker there playing in Carolina in that game. And it took some unbelievable things. I mean, a scoop six, and in the second half, the long broken short pass and all that to even get it close to the total.
I mean, look, look, I don't know if Baker could have played any worse. Like, seriously, he's got guys open all over on the field. Don't throw it to him. They were never going to go after – they were never going after the corner, but they were always going to try to find the other side, you know, go after the weaker side corner to me, but they never could get anything done. And he just couldn't throw completed passes. And really, McCaffrey made the plays that they needed to make when he was able to do it. So, you know, if you're staying away from Lattimore, you get that. But let's go back to Kamara. Kamara's had 24 attempts for 100 yards this year. He's averaged four. His long run is 27. But what's concerning is he's got five receptions for 19 yards in the passing game. Last year, he averaged 9.6 per catch. 9.6 per catch. He's down six yards per catch. And here's the other fact. He's been targeted 11 times. He only has five catches. That's a 45% success ratio. When you're throwing to backs and tight ends, you got to be in the 80s. You got to be in the high 70s, 80s in that ratio.
Conversely, Patterson, he was running all over Seattle. That position change has been incredible.
Oh, my God, it's unbelievable. And now he's playing both positions. I mean, look, this Atlanta team, I think I undergraded Mariota. He's better than I thought. He's playing better. Their offensive line's still not any good. They're as bad on defense as ever, but they've got skill players. Pitts is not a tight end. He's a wide receiver. Let's put that out there. But they can make plays. And this Patterson guy, see, what I think people misunderstand a lot about the National Football League is the running back makes the spread. The back, not the receivers, the back. And when Patterson's the back, it's dangerous. When Kamara's the back, it's dangerous, but he hasn't looked the same.
Let's go quick, boys. Mike Palm, 3.5, Cincinnati's laying it. What do you got?
We're seeing very little action on this game. Just some Bengals money line. Pass for me.
Okay, pass Michael Lombardi.
I'm passing on the game. I would lean towards Miami, but I'm passing.
You fired him up. Look, that's what Palm's pressing three.
Thank you,
Mike.
That's
exactly what you're
here
for. Thank you, Mike. Enjoy it. Thank you. Appreciate you. Michael Lombardi,
thank you,
enjoy
Patrick.
The football game tonight. Okay.
I'll see you tomorrow, Patrick.
Dave and Amal next. We'll see you tomorrow.